Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. Obviously, we had the podcast yesterday with Brett Okamoto previewing UFC Fight Night 143. We'll talk briefly UFC with John Murray coming up. We'll also recap the NFL, do a little boxing as well. And then an old friend of mine is going to make his Behind the Bets podcast debut. You might know him from Vegas Stats and Information Network out in Las Vegas. Mitch Moss is going to talk about a ridiculous, profitable betting trend in hockey. First periods. We'll talk about all that. Mitch Moss will break it down for us. And then Mike Clay will have some prop bets. He has three for us this week. So a lot of good content coming up ahead of conference championship weekend. Short numbers for both home teams that are favored. Murray and I both like one of the home teams. So let's dive deeper into that. Kai, how are you, man, after last weekend? What they many say is the best football weekend of the year?
Oh, yeah. Awesome, man. Feeling great.
Yeah, I previewed the show, but I should have said hi at least initially.
No, it's all good. I mean, Dallas lost, so yeah. I'm good.
You're good? As a Giants fan, that was your main focal point there?
I mean, now it's just, you know, whatever happens, we're just going to have a party.
Interesting. All right.
Haters going to hate.
Yeah, man, we got a lot to get through, so let's get to it.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Mr. Director, your drop made the UFC podcast yesterday with Brett Okamoto because kicking is not for losers when we talk MMA.
Oh, absolutely not. I can't wait to listen to that. I'm excited for the first UFC card on ESPN this Saturday. That should be good fights on Saturday. We got a good ESPN UFC card, and then we've got Adrian Broner against Manny Pacquiao at the MGM Grand on Saturday night. I'm looking forward to being in attendance at that one.
Oh, so in attendance. All right, so we're going to get your picks for those two cards in a moment, but when, how do we really process what happened last weekend?
The NFL games?
Yes.
It was the first game went exactly as I expected. I liked Kansas City a lot in that game, and they won pretty easily. The second game, I didn't really have a strong opinion on it. I know a lot of people were picking Dallas. I was surprised at how easily New England beat the Chargers. I'll be honest. Thought the Chargers were. I just thought the Chargers were better than that. It was a terrible spot for the Chargers. The second straight week playing in that one Eastern time zone game, or time slot, I mean. And New England just jumped out all over them. The only game that was really surprising was really the last game with Philadelphia. Philadelphia had every chance to win that game. And I thought there was a questionable no call, which should have been pass interference late in the game. When the Saints were up 17-14, they didn't call it. And then, obviously, the Alshon Jeffrey drop, or whatever you want to call it, where the ball went through his hands.
Yeah.
New Orleans was very lucky to survive that game.
So let's start with the kicking is for losers moments. Sean McVay, up 8. Late, 4 minutes to go, I believe, on the goal line. Goes for it on fourth down. Field goal makes it a 2-possession game. Virtual automatic win instead. I think he sends a message to his team for the rest of the playoffs, not just that game.
Yeah, I thought it was clearly the way to go there. You guys probably aren't surprised to hear me say that, but even if you somehow get stopped there, and the Rams were running the ball down Dallas's throat all game, so you have to think you're going to get it. But even if they somehow get stopped, you've got the Cowboys backed up inside their own one-yard line. That's why I'm always in favor of going for it down there, because the worst-case scenario really isn't that bad. I mean, having the other team pinned inside their 6-inch line is really not that bad of a scenario for you.
True. I think the 2-possession game with 4 minutes to go makes it made it really risky. But that was interesting. And then you had the fake punt by Sean Payton because kicking is for losers.
Yeah, that was a little bit more questionable. I guess I'm not.
I saw it coming. I got to be honest. I was saying it's coming here.
I'm not a big fan of the fake punt when you have a top quarterback. Like, I would rather just take my chances with my offense, just throwing for it. Like we saw Alabama had that fake punt against Clemson. I mean, why not just have Tua try to pick up the first down with his arms or his legs? To me, that's the better move there.
Well,
I thought
the difference
I was really happy with
the element of surprise was much more a variable with the fake punt, right? Because it's on its own 30-something.
That's true. I was very happy with Kansas City. Andy Reid was very aggressive early in that game. It really set the tone for that game. Kansas City going for it on fourth and shorts, and it led to touchdowns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was very happy with that as a Chiefs backer myself. And it's I think if Andy Reid brings that same aggressive mentality to the AFC Championship game this weekend, I think Kansas City's going to win easily. What concerns me, though, is they fall behind. He gets conservative, he gets scared, and then I think they could blow it.
So real quick, how did the house do? I imagine you guys cleaned up on the Chiefs cover.
Yeah. The Chiefs
world
was
on the
Colts.
Awesome. Now, I got
Everybody
Kai texting me. Kai, you're texting me, tweeting us, wondering if that's a square dog alert.
Yeah, had to get involved, man.
Everybody bet Indianapolis. It was crazy. Even as the number was dropping, because like no matter what, you at some point you've written so much money, you've got to try to do something to get something back on the other side. Even as we were lowering it to 4.5, people were just taking +4.5. It did nothing to deter just this one-way onslaught of Colts money. The Kansas City win was a huge win for us here.
So I didn't really get the official square dog tweet or text from you.
I thought I made it pretty clear to you that it was a square dog. I mean, you're looking for a 4 or 5 to 1 ticket count. You're never going to get something like that in a game of that kind of volume. That's just not going to happen. But I told you it was like 2.5 to 1. And in a volume game like that, I thought that was really high.
You realize the Twitter feed was blowing up. The people wanted the alert, Alfred. The bat signal.
I tried to make it as clear to you as possible what I thought was going to happen in that game.
How'd you guys do in the night game with the Rams barely covering?
We did well, not as well as the first game, certainly, but there was a ton of Dallas money line in that game. There was a lot of money on the point spread both ways. We would have done better if the game had gone under the total. So it wasn't a great result for us, but it was a solid result. And then actually the morning game Sunday was very good. We took a ton of money on the Chargers money line in that game. So that was kind of a strange position to be in, actually needing New England at home in a postseason game. I can't recall being in that spot before.
As a favorite, no less, too, yeah. So 1990 was the last time all four favorites had covered in the divisional round weekend.
Wow.
So you knew that was doomed come Eagles-Saints game.
Yeah, and it almost happened again. I think the Saints had a field goal that would have made it 23-14. That game really came down to the total for us, though. That game staying under was a huge win for us, the Philadelphia and New Orleans game. We would have done better if Philadelphia had won the game outright just because there was so much money line parlay and teaser action to the Saints. But we did okay on that game. You really never do well on the fourth game of an NFL playoff weekend because you've got so much parlay and teaser liability to every side of that game that it's always kind of – it's a hard game to make money on.
How did you feel about the Saints' offense sort of going into its shell, settling for that 50-plus yard field goal?
Well, I didn't like it at all.
No, and I didn't either. I knew shank was coming.
It almost cost them. I mean, I didn't think much of it at all. I thought it was a huge mistake.
Now, if they go up 9, obviously it plays out much differently. You can't assume that they wouldn't play for the field goal early, the same play calls. You can't assume that. But at least you're covering on defense before the drive starts. That's not what the case was when you're only up 6.
Yeah, I never like teams going into the shell like that. You guys know that.
Mm-hmm.
It almost cost them, and if that ball was right there in Alshon Jeffrey's hands, if he makes that catch, which I have to think he makes almost every time, we could be talking about an Eagles-Rams game this weekend.
Right. I mean, it wasn't in the end zone, and there was still still yardage to go, and there still could have been time left for Drew Brees to get in field goal range. So
true.
Never know how it plays out. Maybe even it's a pick six on the next play, right? And then
it's very possible. But I all I'm saying is New Orleans, they weren't ready at the start of that game. They got punched in the mouth. I will say I give their defense a lot of credit. Their defense really buckled down. Gave up 2 touchdowns right away, didn't give up a single point the rest of the game. So I think New Orleans has a very underrated defense right now.
Let's talk about the two games. Both point spreads opened 3 for the home team, but now New Orleans 3.5.
Yeah, we're up to 3.5. We're at 3.5 even money right now. We had some sharper guys taking plus 3.5, minus 110 yesterday, and now we've juiced it at minus 120. Seems like every time we go to minus 3.5, minus 110 both ways, we see money show up on the Rams in this game.
What do you and you think you're going to get Chiefs money a lot, or what do you think you're going to need the Chiefs? What are we looking at here? I mean, I know you mentioned Patriots, but what about the sharp money?
We'll definitely need the Chiefs in the late game. There's going to be a lot of money line action on New England. And then we're just – the way we have our future book set up right now, we win a ton of money on Kansas City, both in the AFC pool and in the Super Bowl pool. So I know our day Sunday, our weekend is really going to come down to the Chiefs. And I can tell you guys this. Every time we drop that money line down into that like minus 145, minus 150 range on Kansas City, we're seeing sharp people taking Kansas City money line and pushing that price back up. We had a very sharp guy laid minus 150 last night. Right now we're at minus 160 on the Chiefs money line.
Yeah, I got involved minus 3 flat. I think money line's probably the way to go. Okay, so the total has come down a little bit. We got an Arctic blast here. Was that what it's called? What do
yeah,
we make of this?
That's what I heard. I think that the reason you're seeing the total come down is like people are speculating that the weather's going to be terrible this weekend, and they're trying to get ahead of it by betting the under now. And I'm fine with that because I'm pretty sure that by the time the game kicks off on Sunday, we're going to need the under.
Yeah, you guys are higher than the offshore market. Is that because the public is just going to bet over?
I think so, especially you're going to end up with a lot of parlay liability because that's the second game. That's really what happened to us last weekend where after we posted the first 3 games, we had all this parlay liability to the over in the fourth and final game. And I think we'll see that again this week with the Patriots-Chiefs game.
So with the Arctic blast, now we've talked about it on the podcast with you and others before, is if there's snow, it actually helps the over. People kind of overlook that.
Yeah.
Wind is the biggest deterrent. That's the under because it's obviously harder to pass when it's stiff yeah. winds. But when it becomes really, really, really cold, the thought process is just like, I don't know, it's hard to fire on all cylinders. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to figure out the rationale for the under.
You know, if the field conditions are slick, it really favors the offense because the guy with the ball, he knows which way he's going. The defender doesn't know which way he's going, and if he doesn't have good footing, it's going to be hard to keep up with him. I think you're exactly right about the wind, though. The wind is what really will knock the total down because they'll be forced to run the ball more, and obviously that keeps the clock moving.
I will say if it's really like, you know, with wind chill below zero, it's hard because games in the past have sometimes been legendary defenses, right? So is it really the weather? Or is it the defense? But I have a hard time thinking everyone's just running around, throwing the ball around like we saw in the previous meeting of the Chiefs Patriots.
Yeah, especially it's hard for me to picture Brady in freezing cold temperatures at his age. It doesn't look like he's got much left on his arm. Even the game on Sunday was all just short to intermediate passes. It's hard for me to believe that he could engineer touchdown drives in freezing cold temperatures on the road on Sunday.
I have a feeling we're going to see Brady look his age.
I do too. And I think, like I said earlier, I think as long as Kansas City stays aggressive, as long as they jump all over New England and they don't go into that shell like we always talk about, I really think Kansas City is going to win this game by double digits.
Yeah, I like the Chiefs too. Do you see that stat with the ref that the Rams have? They're 0-8 when he's their ref.
No, I didn't see that.
Really? It is.
I love a good ref stat.
Yeah, Bill Vinovich.
Okay.
Rams are 0-8 with him as the referee. 0-2 this year and against the spread.
Nobody likes a good referee stat more than I do.
I know. Is Jerome reffing this weekend for you?
I don't think so, and I'm disappointed. I saw John Perry's doing the Super Bowl. It's not one of my favorite guys. I was hoping for like Jerome Boger or John Hussey to be the Super Bowl ref. I thought that would have been funny, but they're going with John Perry. John Perry, I think he was the guy that did the Dallas LA game on Saturday.
You're the guy I would ask, so I don't know.
And he threw that late flag. I thought that was a pretty generous call where he threw a late flag that got Dallas that final touchdown that put the game over the spread. If anything, I thought that was offensive pass interference on Amari Cooper. I know the NFL loves to call everything for whichever team is behind to bring the two teams closer together. I know it creates a lot of drama at the end.
They do, don't they?
Oh, they absolutely do. They always do that. They always want to increase the drama, and certainly if one team is behind by two scores, they're going to get a favorable whistle, and they'll try to bring the two squads closer together. I actually thought, too, I mean, not that it mattered, because New England was going to win that game no matter what, but I thought the Patriots were the beneficiaries of some really favorable whistles in that first half against the Chargers.
Well, the opening drive, the pass interference on Gronk.
Yeah, they were good. I mean, they were going to win the game anyway. I'm not saying that the Patriots won because of the refs, but certainly they were put in the right direction by the refs in that game.
Here's a stat courtesy of Johnny Campbell over at Odd Shark. Conference championship weekend, last 5 years. The home team, 10-0 straight up, 9-1 against the spread.
Is that right? They've won 10 straight? Wow.
The Eagles last year, they went off as dogs,
yeah,
right?
They were a 3-point dog in that game.
Right off the Minneapolis Miracle.
Yeah. Wow. And then, so the previous 4 years, when the favorite at home covered all.
Yeah, like Broncos. Remember times. Broncos beat the Patriots?
But weren't the Broncos a dog in the year where the Broncos ended up winning the Super Bowl against Carolina? I'm pretty sure they were a dog in the AFC Championship game at home against New England.
Well, they still would have covered. These aren't home favorites. These are just home
teams. Oh, I got you. They were home. I got you. Just covering the spread.
By the way, I mentioned it. Brady and Belichick, 3-4 against the number in their career as a playoff road team. And this year, the Pats have really struggled on the road.
Yeah, I think the Patriots are 3-5 on the road this season. And I think we touched on it last week, but the Patriots played a very easy schedule during the regular season like they always do. And they got a first-round bye, and then they got a very favorable draw in the postseason with the time slot. New England, I just don't think they're that good. I don't think they're anywhere near as good as Kansas City. And as long as Kansas City doesn't just fall all over themselves, I think they should win this game pretty easily. I'm not trying to jinx those Chiefs fans out there. It's just really what I think. I think the Super Bowl is really Kansas City's to win, but certainly this game for sure is theirs to win.
Brady's actually lost three straight road playoff games. 2007 was the last time he won a road playoff game. Now, they're usually at home.
That was at the Chargers. I remember that game, wasn't it? Wasn't that the game?
The guy dropped the ball celebrating?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was that game, wasn't it?
I had the Patriots that year.
Yeah, and then they ended up losing to the Colts in the AFC Championship game the next week in Indianapolis.
Right, when the Colts were down 21, was it?
Yeah, I think it was 21-3, and the Colts came storming back, and that was Manning's first Super Bowl.
I went to that one with my brother in Miami.
Against the Bears?
Oh, rainy man. One, yeah. They gave up an opening kickoff touchdown.
Yeah.
And
Devin Hester.
DeHester runs it back, and they still lost.
That's a tough one. Well, their quarterback was Rex Grossman.
Sexy Rexy. I believe the headline the next day in the newspaper is either then or another year. It was Train Rex.
Is that the biggest QB mismatch in Super Bowl history? Peyton Manning against Rex Grossman?
Probably.
That's got to be on the very short list of the biggest ones, right? That's pretty bad.
So we're going to talk props with Mike Clay coming up. What kind of handle do you get from the props in this round?
It's pretty good. Certainly it's nothing compared to the Super Bowl, but we expand the prop menu for the conference championship games, and we're going to see a good amount of handle on these. Hopefully we don't have a missed extra point, because anytime there's a missed extra point, we just get buried on those. People love betting on that, and it seems to happen more often than you would think.
I would imagine the odds aren't as pronounced anymore.
No, they're not, because everybody bets the yes. So really, if anything, you would think there'd be value on the no, considering that. But what we'll see a lot of money on is people love to bet any other score versus touchdown as the first score of the game. That's a very popular one. And we always get a lot of money on both of the teams' team point totals over.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see a lot of money there, and then we'll see money on those extra point. People like to bet that yes, and you've got these really high profile quarterbacks in both of the games. So I think we'll see a lot of money on both those guys over their yardage and over their their touchdown passes, all those guys.
Yeah, I can see points being expected. It's for the first time in ESPN's database, definitely 30 years, but we're looking at probably ever, just given prior to 30 years, that both over-unders have been over 55 points.
Yeah, I don't have any data, but I'm sure that's the first time. How could that ever happen?
Right. So so it's no surprise that people are going to bet those quarterback numbers, all the props over, because it is expected to be high scoring. So
certainly, and we're also going to see a lot of bets on, yes, touchdown. All these different players to score a touchdown, yes, will be a very popular option.
All right, man, anything else worth noting? I wanted to get into the fight cards.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I'd rather talk about a good fight than the NFL. You guys know that. I like Kansas City. I think they're the right side. I think they're going to win this game. I think that if they don't win this game, they have no one to blame but themselves, because the table is set for them to win. They haven't been to the Super Bowl in 49 years, and it's all right there for the taking on Sunday evening, and I think that they're going to get it done. I don't really have a strong opinion in the AFC game. There's nothing that would really surprise me there, but I can tell you guys, we've seen some sharp guys taking +3.5 at -110.
Copy. All right, so let's talk fights. We'll start with the boxing. Who do you like? What sharp action have you taken?
Nothing yet. Nothing in terms of sharp action. I would lean to Manny Pacquiao here, but I'm not like in a real rush to go lay 300 on him. Adrian Broner, very talented fighter, always been a very talented fighter. He's a bit of a knucklehead. He probably hasn't got as much out of his career so far as he should have, given his talent level. But I think this is really a stage for Broner to kind of right that wrong and live up to the hype of that he had in the beginning of his career. Again, this is the biggest fight of his career, pay-per-view fight against Manny Pacquiao in Las Vegas. Most of the money we've seen so far has been on Manny, and we've taken a couple bets on under 10.5 rounds at a big plus. I don't really see that as a good bet, though. This fight should really go to decision.
Nice, and you'll be in the house.
I'll be in the house, yeah, and I'm excited. I haven't been to a fight at the MGM Grand Garden, I think, in almost 3 years. I saw Terrence Crawford fight there a few years ago, but they're doing all the big fights at T-Mobile now.
Right.
And in my opinion, the Grand Garden is the better venue for a big fight. It just feels like more like a big fight. T-Mobile Arena is built more for hockey, and eventually they certainly expect to have an NBA franchise playing there. I think the Grand Garden Arena at the MGM is where the big fight should be.
Well, look, I agree with you. There's nothing like a fight night in Vegas, especially when it's in a casino area where you have to walk through the casino. I love how all the tables, blackjack minimums, craps minimums get raised because of just the high foot traffic. Yeah, but it's just nothing like fight night in Vegas.
There's so much energy in the MGM. I went to a lot of big MMA and boxing fights at MGM over the years, and big Conor McGregor fights where the energy in the building was just through the roof. And I don't know that it's going to be quite like that on Saturday, but I'm excited to get back there and excited to be back in the Grand Garden Arena and excited to see Manny Pacquiao. He's such a legend of the sport. And I do think if Manny wins that they're going to aim for a Floyd-Manny fight in the spring. Mm. And even if Manny loses, they could still do it, right?
Right.
They could still sell. But it would be better for that fight if Pacquiao won on Saturday.
I have been in the building. I was actually in the press conference after the fight when Manny sang with Paris Hilton.
Really?
And yeah, it sounded as well as you thought it. It sounded like you thought it would.
Angelic.
It doesn't sound great. It doesn't sound great.
No.
I'm excited, and it's good for me, too, because, you know, on Sunday, the first game isn't until, like, 12 o'clock out here.
Right.
So I can go to the fight and maybe get a couple drinks afterwards and still be fine on Sunday morning, boys.
Yes, you can.
Still be ready for my day job Sunday.
UFC out in the Brooklyn East Coast. And anything jump out to you?
We had a sharp guy actually played Henry Cejudo. +170 against TJ Dillashaw in the main event. That makes me a little nervous. I don't know that I want to get in front of Dillashaw right now. Both Cejudo and Dillashaw are so good. It'll be interesting to see Dillashaw cutting to 125 for the first time in his career, how he handles that weight cut. And I think maybe the speculation is he won't be as good at 125, and that could favor Cejudo a little bit here. We did see a sharper player take that. Also had a sharper player bet Edwards against Bermudez. That's one of the preliminary fights. Now, this guy took +105, and Edwards is now -135. that bet makes more sense to me. Bermudez is kind of washed up at this point in his career.
All right, so what's the play that is probably the best? Edwards?
I'd say Edwards. I haven't seen any money on this, but I have to think that Paige Van Zandt's going to win because I know that the UFC has like scoured the earth to find a girl that they think Paige Van Zandt can beat. Like, Paige Van Zandt is not fighting on this card to lose that fight. she has no business really being on the main card of what the UFC considers to be a pretty big event for them with the first card on ESPN. And she's there to win. She's not there to lose that fight. So I'm not sure if I'm going to bet her, but I fully expect her to win.
Yeah, we had a separate UFC podcast with Brett Okamoto that posted yesterday, and he was kind of leaning there as well. Thought Paige Van Zandt was a good value, -$1.60. One thing I brought up, you mentioned the Cejudo-Dillashaw fight. Mm-hmm. Over under 4.5 rounds with the over juiced. Why doesn't this fight go under 4.5?
Well, you're talking about guys fighting at 125 pounds. That'd be the last weight class where you see a lot of finishes, a lot of knockouts. Cejudo's last fight against Demetrius Johnson, he won a 5-round decision. That's probably why. But yeah, I mean, betting over 4.5, that's pretty. That doesn't give you much margin for error. I know what you're saying there. But I'd probably lean to Edwards. And if I had to bet something, I would bet Paige Van Zandt because I think that the UFC has set the table for her to win this fight.
Cejudo's last 5 fights, 3 went the distance.
Well, I know I was at a fight where he got knocked out by Demetrius Johnson pretty early on.
First
I remember
round.
That fight.
First round. Halfway, 249 in.
Yeah, I was at that fight. You know, this fight was originally scheduled for Anaheim next weekend. And I was going to go to Anaheim for the fight. And they ended up scrapping that entire event and moving the Cejudo-Dillashaw fight to ESPN. So I was a little disappointed in that. But I understand why they did it. Obviously, ESPN wants their first UFC event to be a big fight, a big card. And I don't think there's a single UFC fight that's scheduled right now that's as good as Cejudo against Dillashaw. I don't think they have anything on the books right now that's this good.
So Van Zandt is a play. Edwards is a play. That's about it.
Yeah, and if you have to bet the main event, I would take Cejudo just because the guy that bet it here, he is a sharp guy. He's one of our more respected MMA players, no question about that.
All right, so value at plus $1.70 there.
And don't forget, Greg Hardy is fighting on this card.
Yeah, we talked about it. And
what did Brett say about that?
Well, he was saying that, you mean you're not a loyal listener of the pod? So
I'm going to spin that pod. Believe me, I'm a big fan of Brett and yourself. So I'll definitely listen to it. I just haven't had a chance yet.
He basically said like Hardy should win, but Hardy has not been in these kind of fights, these high profile events, and it's not the same as football. It's just not, and it's just the giant spotlight, the pressure. You're on an island, and those kind of odds. There's no chance in hell he'd lay -550.
Yeah, I don't really like laying big prices in heavyweight fights, period, just because...
That was the other thing. He did mention the heavyweight component as well.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. He could get caught and get knocked out. I think another thing to look for on this card is some pretty highly regarded UFC prospects are fighting on this card. Alexander Hernandez is a very highly regarded prospect. He's a young kid. He's fighting Donald Cerrone, Cowboy. That's going to be the main fight on the preliminary card, so I'll definitely want to see that fight. And Gregor Gillespie, he's not as young as Hernandez, but he's another guy. He's undefeated. He's an up-and-comer. He's a huge favorite against Yancy Medeiros. He should definitely win that fight. But they've really stacked this card with some pretty good young fighters and Paige Van Zandt.
All right, bud. Excellent stuff, as always. I hope you enjoy the fight Saturday night and sleeping in the extra Z's on Sunday morning. And I'm going to see you next week, bud.
That's a long Sunday. You know, we don't get out of there real early that Sunday because you got to set that Super Bowl number. And then certainly there will be a lot of media requests after we get up that Super Bowl line. And everybody asks me, when are we going to get it up? It's a good question. If Kansas City or New England gets out to a big lead, we'll get it up very soon. I know... You guys remember the Arizona-Carolina NFC Championship game? Carolina had a huge lead in that game, and we got the Super Bowl number up really early on. So we'll get it up as soon as we're ready to call the AFC Championship game.
I imagine it's going to be obscene, especially with the prop bets, if it's Chiefs and either of those teams.
Yeah, especially, you know, Chiefs, Rams, like we saw the first time. We've got look-ahead numbers on all the potential Super Bowl matchups, and the total for Chiefs, Rams, 63. You know, if we get a game like the Monday night game those two teams played in Los Angeles, we might have to shutter the doors here at the Superbook with the with the way the props would go. That would be a disaster for us. What we want to see is another Super Bowl like that Carolina-Denver game, fellas, where nothing happened.
Hold on. You got a safety on the first play.
Carolina-Denver? No, that was wasn't that Denver? Oh,
that was Seattle. Excuse me. That was Seattle-Denver. My apologies.
Carolina-Denver was beautiful. And I was on with Mitch Moss and Paulie Howard this morning, and I told them I'm rooting for that. And they practically screamed at me on air, saying, "Oh, be a man of the people." I said, "No way."
I was just about
to win money.
You're on the wrong. Nah. You're on the opposite side. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Hey, bud, I'm looking forward to next week.
All right, man. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, take care. Bye. All right, that's Mr. Director John Murray of the Superbook at the Westgate in Las Vegas. He mentioned Mitch Moss of Vegas Stats and Information Network. Mitch will join me next, and we'll also have Mike Clay on later. To do the, what do we call that? The 2-minute offensive prop bets?
Got to hurry up. Nerd run.
The hurry up. Yeah, we're making the nerd run. All right, so Mitch Moss coming up next to talk about a very intriguing trend in hockey betting. That's next after these messages. We now welcome in for the first time on the Behind the Bets podcast, a friend of mine that I've known about 15 years. You might know him from Vegas Stats and Information Network, Follow the Money. Every morning during on the weekdays, Mitch Moss. How are you, my man?
Hey, Doug. How are you, pal? Good to talk to you.
I know. So lots to get through. So you co-host with Paul Howard. What time?
We are on 7 to 10 Eastern. So out here, that's, yeah, right? It's 4 to 7 out here live on the West Coast, and then the replay goes 9 and noon Pacific. A lot of numbers here, I know, and then noon to 3 Eastern time again.
Well, people can always hit the rewind button, the 15, 30 seconds, whatever it is, on the podcast. So we're good there. You can do numbers here on podcast form. So, look, we've known each other forever. We worked in Las Vegas. I did some stuff with ESPN Radio as well. You also hosted a show. You left to the Bay Area. Was that overlapping when the Warriors came out, just stormed onto the scene?
That was – I was there for 2 years, give or take, and it was right before they got extremely good. So it was still the Monte Ellis – Steph backcourt, and the questions in the local media, still, they were like, they never bought into Steph because he had all the ankle problems.
Right.
So it was during that time, but I will tell you, I went to a bunch of games there. They were really, really bad. The team was obviously, but the crowd, they were getting 17,000, 18, whatever it is, like basically sellout crowds when they were terrible. The fans there have always been great and, you know, good for them finally exploding like they have.
So, obviously, with the shift to legalization and everything in the national landscape, your guys' show has been great for the mornings. I know it's a little rough waking up out there in Vegas Pacific time, but it's a staple for a lot of people driving to work. And like you said, the broadcast, the re-air as well. But one thing I want to bring you on, we'll start here, is that something that you uncovered with one of your listeners that has just been incredible, incredible. We're talking hockey betting and really essentially a prop bet. Can you explain to us what this betting trend has been like for you and what exactly it is?
Sure. So, well, I caught wind of this. You might know the gentleman's name. Alex Smith, actually, is the first person who pointed this out to me. And this goes back now weeks when I noticed that the Blackhawks, he was tweeting this out, that they were red hot to go over the total 1.5 goals in the first period. And I was like, wait, what? Really? And then so we got to talking. And it's not only the Blackhawks that have been covering at a really alarming rate. It's the Lightning, and it goes on. There's like a whole list of teams that, for whatever reason, and we've had on, you know, longtime hockey bettors, hockey experts, and there's really no great explanation to why this might be the case, other than the game has changed over the years, and we're seeing more goals now than basically ever. But with, you know, those two teams in particular, the Blackhawks and the Lightning, as of right now, in the first period, and the goals now, and I'll get into this coming up here a little bit later on, but the first period total has always been 1.5, and then they can just juice it however they want. But the Blackhawks are 38-10 on a season, 79.2% to the over, and the Lightning, they just had their 18-game streak snapped of going over 1.5 goals last week. Think about that. And now they're 37-10, 78.7%. It's just been incredible.
And the juice has been like 150, 160 at its highest, right? It's not like it's 310 or something crazy.
No, no. Actually, so it depends on, again, wherever. All books have been different, by the way, from what I've seen. So one game might be $1.55 at the same time where it's $1.90 in another book. It's been completely nuts. I've seen it get as high as -220 to the over.
Wow.
But this, there's also this stuff. So here's the new wrinkle in the entire thing. It's spreading like wildfire so much that 2 days ago, I believe, we saw the first two posted for a first period for some of these teams. And now this morning, for the games tonight, I'm looking at a couple of games where they have two. So I guess some books are actually going to say, screw the juice, we're going to move it to two. And that's what they've done.
So you've had odds makers on the show, and they've talked about just the handle in this first period is strikingly different than all their other hockey handle.
Well, I will. Okay, so this has really picked up again over the last couple of weeks. There was a gentleman who reached out to me last week who has been, we'll call him an insider into some books, maybe, you know, some offshore books over the years. And he gave me the, you're not going to believe this. There was a Blackhawks game last week where the breakdown, it was like hours before they dropped the puck, and people at the book were like, what's going on? They had 171,000 plus on the over for a Blackhawks game, 1,200 on the under. Think about that. And there was a Sharks game over the, I think it was, I'm going to get my day screwed up. So, but anyway, there was a big college basketball card, and the overall handle on the, it actually went both ways, the over and the under for that game in the first period. It essentially rivaled any college basketball game on the board that night. That's what we're talking about with this stuff right now.
So the Blackhawks, 38 of 48 games have gone over the first period total, over 1.5.
Yep.
And the Lightning, 37 of 47.
That is correct. And I'll give you some other teams here as well. The Blue Jackets, and some of these teams, by the way, it's like bang, bang. Like, there's a goal in the first 2 minutes. I think it was the Devils game earlier this week. I think they played the Blue Jackets. Two goals in the first 2.5 minutes. There you
winner.
Go. There's the
winner.
Over.
Boom.
Winner.
Cash.
Just like that. So you can also find, for a lot of the stuff, you can find, will both teams score a goal in the first period, like plus 150, plus 145. Are we going to get a goal in the first 5 minutes? That's some really good plus money. Are we going to see a goal in the first 10 minutes? That might be like -$1.50 or whatever, but that's coming in a lot. Blue Jackets are 32 and 14. Sharks are 33 and 15. They went over again last night against the Penguins. The Penguins have been red hot. They're 29 and 17. And you have other teams that are like 10 games over 500. But I'm looking. So what do we have? 30 teams in the league. Get this done. So 10 teams right now are below 500. But the Flyers and Hurricanes are only 2 games below 500, and the Kings are 3 games below 500 along with Toronto. The Jets are exactly at 500, 23 and 23. The other 19 teams in the league are over 500 on the first period totals.
Wow.
That is just...
Now,
granted, some of these teams are only a game or two over 500, but that is absolutely lopsided.
So you said that you've had insiders on that haven't explained it. I actually heard Brian Blessing last week, who's a Vegas veteran, huge hockey fan, used to do TV and radio in Buffalo area, big Sabres guy, and I've known, obviously, he's a friend of all the programs. He kind of actually did justify and explain why it's happening, right?
Well, he thought that it was, yeah, his reasoning was, he thinks teams are coming out with such a sense of urgency in the first period to get a goal right away and to get the lead and then operate from there. So then it would be a different kind of a ball game. That was, basically that's what he was trying to say, is that teams just come out hair on fire. Here we go. Let's get a goal right now. Let's get 15 shots on net if we can in the first period and hopefully break through. So that does make sense. Other people have kind of guessed as to why it's happening. They're speculating like it could be the equipment for the goalies, not as big as it used to be. Fresh legs right away compared to they might be a little bit tired, you know, late second period and the third period as well. So that was his, I guess that does kind of make sense with what he was trying to say.
Well, look, it feeds to my theory, and I wrote a column on it, but it really needs to be like a thesis paper for a college student. It's like why we are dumb enough to bet the full game. I mean, if you think about it, every sport, yeah. Hockey, the goalie's pulled. NFL or college, prevent defenses, all that garbage time. Basketball, we know about the free throws and the garbage time. So it really is silly that, you know, a game is played for 90%. That's how we handicap 90% of the game. And then the last 10% is just bizarre or whatever it is, last 5%. So it does.
So many random things can happen. You're
yeah, it does right. Like kind of isolate the handicap in a way. And it's a different handicap, like we talked about, fresh legs, all that. And when teams get a lead, especially in hockey that doesn't have a ton of scoring like maybe basketball, there is a strategy change, at least in the maybe third period, but maybe even the second. I don't know enough about hockey in that regard.
No, sure. I mean, that part absolutely makes sense to me.
So we're crazy for betting full games. We should be doing stuff like this. And like I like the Spurs tonight, first quarter. I don't love it, but it's a play more than like the game bet. I think they're like got embarrassed in the last game. I think they're good bounce back spot. I just think there's ways to do it. Like first to 20 points, I used to bet first to 10 points.
Sure.
You can do those props. If you like, for example, another handicapper out in Vegas does radio. Dave Koken gave out Pitt on Monday night, off Florida State coming off that excruciating loss to Duke on Saturday, had to travel. Pitt was a good spot. He gave out Pitt plus five. And I was asking him, I go, why not just give out Pitt first half? If you want to like, if it's all about like the flat spot, then why don't we isolate it even more so where their perceived handicap is more of an advantage?
Sure. And I mean, that stuff is going to be available everywhere too, by the way, first quarters, first halves, all that kind of stuff. So there's no, some people have actually said that they can't find the first periods in hockey, which is a little weird, but actually some Vegas books don't even offer it. So
like now, because of the trend, they're off the board or they never did originally?
No, they've never had it up originally.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Well, hockey's such a low handle, right? Because the Nevada Gaming Report lists football, college and pro together, basketball, and then other, and in the other category is hockey.
Yep. I guess until last year when the Golden Knights out here were getting so much handle and so much betting action every single day, that crazy story. Then this, I guess, I don't know, maybe things will change here. I mean, if this continues into like March or something like that, maybe they'll have to come up their own. I doubt it. I mean, that I don't want to get too nuts here, but maybe they have to come up their own hockey category.
Maybe. Why not? I mean, if there's a pro team there, and like you said, the handles changed last year in the craziness, but what a trend. And for everyone listening to the podcast, go back, re-listen to those teams. It's the Blackhawks and Lightning at the top, but Columbus is right there, and Pittsburgh's right there as well. And what was the other team, the fifth team?
The Sharks are in there.
Sharks.
And it actually goes below that. I mean, the Senators have been great in the first period. They're actually more of an over team, but they're there. Minnesota's 27-18. The Devils are 27-19. Montreal 28-20. I mean, there's a bunch of teams that are good, but basically, you have to stick to the teams at the very top. It's the Blackhawks, Lightning, Blue Jackets, Sharks, and Penguins.
That is remarkable. It really
is.
It
really is.
And I think, you know, we maybe have an angle for it, but it is just remarkable. So, fun trend. I know you guys have had a large following. Gives you a little action on the ice, too, and those when there's a lot of days in between. Now we have, obviously, hoops ratcheted up, but especially in December, it was, you know, some much needed action between football games. Let's talk about the conference championship games this weekend. Where do you guys what do you see happening?
Well, I think these numbers, both the games are just so rock solid, with the Chiefs laying the three. I'm actually at the south part right now. I'm looking at the Saints minus 3.5. I know the more people I talk to, I guess they're probably gonna suck me into betting the Chiefs. I don't have a strong opinion really on either game. I love the Patriots last week, but how is that going to look this week? You know, so against playoff teams this year, they were actually 5-0 and they averaged 37 points per game. Houston, Indy, KC, Chicago, and then last week against the Chargers. So they were really good. But on the flip side, on the road, they were completely different. And I mean, Doug, look at some of the game against Jacksonville. They were bad in that game, and Bortles looked great. The Sunday night game at Detroit, they were horrendous.
Horrendous.
And the game that I cannot get out of my head, I watched pretty much the entire thing. When they played at Tennessee, what was that? So
you and I have talked about this off air too. I mean, look, the division has stunk over the years. They get the bye, and they get the home game where Belichick is now 7-1 against the spread in the last 8 divisional playoff games. I think they're all at home too. So you know, the team coming off the bye week win, the wild card weekend win, he beat down mode, and then he's 3-4 on the road in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look, their roster's not very good. Their coaching is excellent.
Yep.
I think I lean Chiefs here.
Yeah, and you know, John Murray was telling me about that as well this week. He really likes the Chiefs. He said that he would actually personally make the number about 4.5. I know, again, it's the Brady Belichick thing, and maybe that's a problem that I have here personally. Just can't get out of my head like betting against them. But you're exactly right. They're really, I mean, they're not that great. I don't think their personnel is outstanding. If you watch the game against the Chargers, that was just coaching, and how, you know, I mean, every time Brady dropped back to pass, Like, do you think he was great in that game, or did he just find wide open receivers every single time he was catching the ball? That's what it was to me. Like, he never threw in a tight window. Those guys were always open.
And it was a horrible spot for the Chargers. Like, the worst spot I could think of.
Oh, my God. Oh, one of the worst back-to-back-to-back road games when you go back to week 17, then East Coast two times in a row. It can't get any worse than that.
Cold weather on top of that. Yeah, no, they were just overwhelmed. Yeah. They were out-coached, and they put – it just takes a lot to win a playoff game, and we saw that with all the teams that won the week one and had to go in week two. I mean, the Eagles were the only one, but they hit their wall after the first quarter.
Yep, absolutely. And I don't think the Patriots are going to have – now, we'll see. I mean, how much of this Arctic blast are we going to get, and will we see some snow maybe and wind, and that could be a game changer, but – I don't think the Patriots really have an answer for Tyreek Hill. If you go back to last year, when Alex Smith was the quarterback in that opening game, I mean, he killed that team. Same thing this year. They had no answer whatsoever. And just Mahomes is, as you know, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is one of the most skilled quarterbacks of all time. And I'm from Wisconsin, so that's why I say that here. But Mahomes is, he's doing stuff right now that I've never even seen Rodgers do ever. I mean, the pass that he made last week, that short pass where there were basically two guys in his way, and then he just threw it sidearm at an angle to get it to Kelsey. I've watched that 50 times, and in my head, I've thought about like what's processing in his brain? Like I can actually pull this throw off. That was impossible, and he made it look easy.
Truly impossible, and we're running out of adjectives and ways to explain it. Look, just sit back and enjoy the games because these are the four best teams. They're the top seeds in both divisions, both conferences, and, there's always live wagering opportunities as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And then, the Saints didn't play well last week. I am concerned about Breeze's arm, for sure. Like, he's absolutely lost the muster on his arm. I don't have a lot of faith in Jared Goff. I know the Gurley and Anderson, it's a great story, what they did, and now this emergence of C.J. Anderson. But the Saints' run defense has been basically the best in football all year long. I know they have the big injury there on the defensive line, but if they can neutralize the run and Gurley and Anderson can't go off, do you have faith in Goff to outscore Drew Brees in the Superdome? Because I don't.
No, and they're not going to have the defensive shifts knowledge like they did against the Cowboys.
Precisely.
Really good stuff. That covers it. That all I wanted to discuss. I just wanted to get you on. Also go down memory lane. Do you remember the first radio hit I had on your program back on ESPN 1100?
The first one ever?
On your show, not the network, but the first show. Okay. It's the first time I was on your show as a guest.
No, what did we talk about?
The eating contest. Remember I dominated?
Oh, the burrito?
Yeah, the burrito.
You were the man in that contest. Was that like, did we have that like at a park or something like that?
Yeah, it was Las Vegas Weekly maybe was the magazine. It was the Las Vegas Gladiators offensive lineman coach and things like that, UNLV coaches. There was a few of us, and I just housed it, and I was very proud. And we did a segment, then that started a bunch of segments. And
are you still the champ, by the way, when it comes to, fast eating and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I've always said speed, not volume, is my forte. So yeah, I can inhale. So that year I did a Chipotle burrito in 1:07.
That's impressive.
And then that was like I was like full. Like then I ate late the night before. So that the next year I like went for a swim the morning of. I did it in like 53 seconds.
Oh, my God. That's okay. So I said today on the air, I don't know if you saw that tweet from, I think somebody had it out about Joel Embiid. He sends like an assistant to at Chick-fil-A. I said today on the air that I could do 100 nuggets, no problem, of the grilled. I could probably do 100 nuggets from Chick-fil-A in like 5 minutes. That's not even difficult, I don't think.
Wow. See, I'm more of a, like I said, the burrito and less than, like, I can inhale. I can't do – so I won the ice cream eating contest as well for the media, and I won a cruise. I did six ice cream sandwiches in 3 minutes.
Wait, don't you get, like, the ice cream headache then at that point?
Right, that's why it was only six of them. Because going into it, I was like, I get brain freeze too quickly. This is not really – and I look over, and some dude's sitting on his ice cream sandwiches before they start the clock. And I was like, okay, it's on, and just, like, the competitive switch flipped. And then I won.
You want a cruise for that?
Yeah, I did. And I had to pay, like, the taxes. And then I ended up not going because, like, our HR was not that thrilled with it. So, I mean, they were, like, so by the book. And then I was dating a girl at the time. We broke up. So I was like, I got no one to go with. I don't want to go. Because I had to, like, fly to Florida and then take a ship out of there. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. You remember, you probably remember John Hansen, who used to work in Las Vegas?
Of course. I think he emceed that event, by the way.
Oh, did he really? Okay, yeah. Because he was the best I had ever seen in my entire life, maybe up until that. But we used to go, so I think it was Arby's. They used to have the 5 for 5, and this is years ago when he lived out here. But we saw, like, on the marquee one day, he's like, hey, let's stop and get a 5 for $5. I'm like, okay, no problem. We'll split it. He looked at me and he goes, split it. I'm like, what? So we go in and I get, like, two of the whatever it is, the cheddar and cheese or whatever. And he orders 5 on his own. Doug, I am not kidding you when I say that I was opening up my second sandwich when he was taking the last bite of the fifth. That was really Joey Chestnut right there.
Yeah. You know, it is just, you kind of forget. And then, like, my mom looks at me, like, I've gone home and, like, got dinner, and she looks at me, she's like, well, how are you already done? Like, what? Why don't you breathe? So then I have to, like, tell myself to just chill out a little bit.
That's a crazy thing. It always catches up with me. Like, I'm never full. Like, I could eat. I'm kind of like you. I don't think I'm as quick as you, but I can just shovel it in and I don't feel full. And then all of a sudden, 10 minutes later, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so miserable.
Give us your best Pauly story from this current run on the show.
Well, it has to be. He gave the Megabuck story.
I know, but, like, something that happened since you've been co-hosting.
Oh, the best one was, okay, so he's running a little bit late. This goes back, and by the way, you bring up Holly's name. For those that don't know, and I'm sure there's a lot here that don't yet, but how would you describe him? A total wild card. He's a lunatic at times.
What makes him brilliant on air is what makes him so strange in person.
Yeah. Because his people skills are, I mean, he's an A on the air. He's an F people skills off the air.
He can be an F. He's not all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's running late one day. It's like a Wednesday. So he shows up. We're on the air at 4 o'clock again out here. He's pulling up the studio he's walking in like at 3:59:50. And I shoo him away. I'm like, get out of here. I'm going to make fun of you for the first 15 minutes of the show and rip on you how you're late. He's like, fine, whatever. He comes back and I ripped him for 15 minutes. He comes back next segment. Well, so we're at the South Point Casino every single day doing the show. He went and gambled at his favorite machine. He had a jackpot for $5,000. While I shoot him away, it took 5 minutes. He comes back. He's waving. He's got the 5 dimes in his hands. Like, there you go, huh? How does that taste? I'm like, USOB. That made me so mad for the next 3 hours. You have no idea.
Look, you guys are dynamite together in Vegas. We discussed. You went to the Bay Area, came back. It's good to have you guys back as a tandem. I forgot he did tell the Megabuck story. You know, he called me on the way.
On the way going over there, did
he? Yeah, he called. I thought he was joking, like probably anyone else he called.
He called me like 3 times that weekend, and he was so vague, he would not give it up to me. He would not tell me.
There's another part to the story I want him to tell on air, but I feel bad he's not here. But basically, he wanted to bet Mayweather in some fight, and the finance guy who's like in charge of it didn't let him, not because of for responsibility, but he's like, I like the other side.
Yeah, that's what he called his ex. Yeah, you can't, that's a bad investment. I like the other side.
And of course, Mayweather won. Like, right.
Of course, he's laying like 220 against Canelo.
I know, it's like so stupid.
Yeah, it's like if you can catch the Warriors at plus $1.15 and win the NBA title. Nah, I like the other side. Wait, what? Are you kidding me?
Mayweather's probably undefeated.
He's never been, he's the best of all time. Come on.
There were some really cheap prices around then. I remember the Ricky Hatton fight. Like, it wasn't that much. It was like $250.
Yeah, you're right. Because it was all, I mean, everybody came here from, you know, back in Hatton. All of his, the fan base came here. And they were all harrying him. So that's why it came down so much.
And just all the hate money towards Mayweather. So there's, it wasn't just the McGregor. I mean, there's always, like you said, Hatton, Canelo. I mean, there's been a lot of, and who's the guy, Ortiz, that he knocked out when he thought the fight was stopped? Is it Ortiz?
Yep. Yeah, I think it was Ortiz.
I think that was like $3.
Was it that low?
I think it was something ridiculous like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, going back, this can sound like it's, Monday morning quarterback here, but the Mayweather-McGregor fight was the best bet of all time. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, they got down to Mayweather like minus $4 or in that neighborhood. Come on.
I think it was less, man. I think it was a lot less.
Jesus.
Well, I got involved at least. One final story. You're a married man.
I am.
You were in my apartment with Pauly, with the ring in your pocket. You didn't tell us.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. It was basically that was the weekend that I got it. You're right. I kept it under wraps. The crazy thing is, like, you go back a long ways with my wife. You worked together.
Right.
What, in
Iowa?
And then you both came to Las Vegas. Did you ever know this, by the way? So you went
to Vegas first, though. I was in Iowa like 2 more years or a year more. Excuse me. She went to Vegas there. First. I was in Iowa like another year or two.
Yeah. But you were, yeah, both two markets, which is really weird. But did you ever know the story that, so she's from San Francisco or from the area. Mm-hmm. So she was looking at a bunch of schools. She eventually went to UCLA, but she looked at Stanford. She looked into Cal. She went to, looked into USC, settled on UCLA. Did you know that there was also one East Coast school that she considered?
She told me this, Brown.
Oh, okay, yeah. It was Brown where you went. I mean, what are we doing? What?
It's a small world, my man. It's a small world.
Yeah, I wish you'd take her off my hands.
By the way, no comment. By the way, the day that you were in my, you know what game we were watching? I had an enormous bet that lost.
It was definitely Championship Sunday, right? Was it not? It was Pittsburgh and Baltimore, I want to say.
Close. It was Tennessee, the Kerry Collins team. That was like 15-1 or whatever that awesome team was.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And they were playing, I believe, the Ravens?
Yep.
And they kicked field goals, two field goals from Jeff Fish on fourth and half a yard. And I'm screaming
right
at the TV. Paulie and
You're
I, right. I think all three of us were.
I do recall that. Yeah,
it was like an Arctic blast. It was one of those Arctic blast things. It was so cold. It was like 4 degrees.
Imagine that. You lost a bet on Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, imagine. Kicking is for losers, right, Mr. Murray?
Of course. There you go. Mr. Murray is right again, yeah.
Kicking is for losers.
There he is. All right, my man. Well, look, it was great catching up. I know we've talked a lot during the football season. It was good to do it on the pod, and excellent stuff with this hockey betting, and we'll continue to monitor it. I can't imagine we jinxed it, but I just hope we didn't.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, thanks, pal. I appreciate having me on.
All right, you got it, bud. And good luck waking up. You're doing the Lord's work out there, getting up that early and delivering the gambling info.
Gun to my head.
Take care.
Talk nerdy to me.
Fantasy insider and regular here on the Behind the Bets podcast, Mike Clay joining us. Mike, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well. How are you, Doug?
Doing well. All right, speed time, 2-minute drill, hurry up offense. We got some prop bets, conference championship games. Let it rip.
All right, let's do it. Let's start out with this Saints-Rams game. I like one in this one. I'm going Drew Brees. Two touchdown passes is the line. Under is plus 110, under minus 130. Believe it or not, Doug, I'm going with the under here. You look at Brees' past five games. He has his passing touchdown totals 2, 1, 0, 1, and 1. They've just been leaning heavily on the running game, especially near the goal line. He's actually been at or under two passing touchdowns in 9 of 17 games this season. Was really hot early on, but since then has cooled off in that department. By the way, the Saints offense overall not really scoring touchdowns like they were earlier on. 4.4 touchdowns per game weeks 1 to 12, but only 2.2 per game in their past six games. That's a cut right in half. So while you look at the play calling, one of the run heaviest in the league and one of the run heaviest near the goal line. And teams, by the way, you look at facing the Rams, 62% of touchdowns against them this season have been passes. That's 24th. They also don't allow many plays. And, as a product of that, the Rams have allowed 0 or 1 passing touchdowns 6 of their past 7 games. So it's a tough team to throw touchdowns against. And the Saints offense has not been as good over the past month and a half. So I'm going to lean towards the under at the plus 110 here.
All right, so under 2 passing touchdowns for Drew Brees. Look, we saw it on the first play against your Eagles a week ago. Underthrew the receiver, intercepted, doesn't quite look as healthy as he has in the past, just turned 40 this week, so maybe age is a factor. Let's go to the AFC Championship game, and you have two plays here.
I do. We'll start with the Patriots running game here. I'm going under on Sony Michel, 75.5 rushing yards at minus 110. I know this is probably tough to get behind after his performance last week, but I expect a bit of a different game script here. I don't think they're going to score on, what was it, 4 straight drives to open the game and have a big lead as they go into Kansas City. And that will kind of align with what they've done this season. I mean, the Patriots averaging 33 called runs per game in their 12 wins, but only 22 per game in their 5 losses. That's obvious. Obviously, that's a game script thing there. But the split is similar at home and the road, right? So they're 9-0 at home this season, averaging 35 runs a game. They're averaging 25 per game on the road where they're 3-5. You look at Michelle's rushing yardage totals and losses this season, 34, 50, 31, 57, 59. None of them are close to the 75.5 line for this game. And his yardage totals on the road, by the way, 34, 50, 22, 31, 133, 57, and 59. Only one of them gets over that mark. So, you know, the Patriots, we know that Michelle is their preferred runner. They've called pass on only 24% of his snaps this season. But when they're behind or it's close, you have James White on the field. They throw 79% of the time when he's out there. So I just think he's going to get game scripted. And listen, if they come out strong and build a lead, this may look silly, but I'm going to lean towards the under here just based on how good Kansas City is offensively.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I mean, look, those numbers are speak for themselves, but you know, these are high totals. So it's interesting that you're taking the under with over-unders in the 56-57 neighborhood, but you certainly make a valid case for each one.
Yeah, and that one's 75.5, so I do like the under there. But as for the other one here, Travis Kelce, I'm going to go over on him. The line for him is 78.5 receiving yards. So, again, I'm expecting a lot of scoring, a lot of passing. We'll keep an eye on the weather, obviously, down to game time. But still, even if it is very cold, I think Kelce can clear 80 receiving yards in this game. In fact, he's cleared this mark, 78 receiving yards in 9 of 17 games this season, and it's actually 77 or more, which is very close to the line, in 11 of 17 games. So he's always in that area, and often he's above this mark. He's seen 8-plus targets in 7 straight games and 14 of 17 this season. In fact, he's averaging 85 receiving yards per game this season. That's over the line. And one kind of interesting note here for the Patriots, their defense, tight ends have been targeted 115 times against them this season. That was 10th most in the league, so a little above average. I think that helps push Kelce over as well. So, again, expecting more passing in this game, so going under on Michelle and over on Travis Kelce.
What do you make of the what adjustments do you make with the weather forecast? Like the Arctic blast, that whole thing. Yeah. What does that mean for your numbers?
Yeah, and I want to keep an eye on that down to game time, but I think that'll cost you a little bit of offense in this game. I just think, you know, if you bring down scoring, you bring down passing a little bit. I don't think you have to do it significantly, but down a little bit. Game script will obviously be a huge factor. But even if you do that, I think with a guy like Kelce, he'll be okay. You know, still in that 75 to 80 receiving yard total. I mean, you might lose some bombs to Tyreek Hill, perhaps, or Sammy Watkins, but Kelce should still be pretty busy in the short to intermediate area. I'd be a little more nervous about Michelle, right? Because if it is freezing and they decide they want to just run the ball as often as they can against Kansas City, he could end up pushing for closer to 20 carries. So, again, I would monitor that, keep an eye on beat reporter reports down to game time. But if it seems like the temperature is just cold, not insane, you know, insanely freezing, I think you're okay with these props.
All right, buddy. Good stuff as always. Really appreciate you taking the time, and you know, we'll obviously get you back here for Super Bowl props.
All right, sounds good. Thanks a lot, Doug.
You got it.
Talk nerdy to me.
Thanks to Mike Clay. Thanks to Mr. Director John Murray, as always, and thanks for making his Behind the Bets podcast debut, Mitch Moss of Vegas Stats and Information Network. Really appreciate his time. I know he's wakes up ungodly hours. And nice of him to stay awake and help us out. And it was good to go down memory lane as well. Kai, any confessions of a non-gambler?
Yeah, actually, I kind of wanted to have you expand upon your Iowa days.
Ah, yes.
I'm interested in this Quad City, Mississippi River, riverboat casino situation. What was the scene back then?
Yeah, you know, it was my fate to just find casinos everywhere I moved. And so basically, Quad Cities, anybody who... fan of the movie Tommy Boy, there's a scene where David Spade is asking for directions and looking for Davenport, and the smart ass guy behind the counter was saying, you need yourself to find another map. And that's because it was in another state. Now, obviously, maps in that area have the region on the other side of the state line, but it was fun for the movie scene. So there's four cities in the Quad Cities area. Two are on Iowa, two are in Illinois. The Mississippi River splits it. Like, I lived in Illinois, drove across the bridge, went into Iowa, and I worked in Davenport, Iowa, which is the biggest of the four cities. And, I mean, look, it's like the movie Vacation with the old lady, Russ, Mississippi, every day. So I lived in the, like, rent-controlled lofts down by the water, and there at every entrance to the bridge is a riverboat. So there's four entrances, right, on each side of the river in each city. There's four riverboats, I believe, if I remember correctly. and some of them pretty dingy, not going to lie. So I could literally walk to a riverboat, and they had dollar happy hour and dollar drinks in the casino. It was pretty dingy, but it was a nice time, and you know, a lot of friends would go down there and pregame, stuff like that, at the casino.
So I don't know if
I was about a sand wedge from the casino entrance. Let's put it that way.
That very believable, especially we're talking about DK. I don't know if you watched the show Ozark on Netflix or not.
Yep.
But now I'm starting to think, was this entire thing inspired by DK's life?
No.
With the whole riverboat in
Missouri.
But
I did live in Missouri before Iowa for like 3 months.
Here we go.
That was my first TV job.
We're learning more and more.
I did Columbia, Missouri, which is where the university is, and covered the Tigers. It was Gary Pinkel's first season with Mizzou. And then I, you know, living in Iowa, I drove to Chicago a lot. So that Ozark show was definitely a lot of familiar references.
We learn a little bit more. We peel the onion and get a different
right. So I was 4 years. I worked 4 years in Iowa at the Fox affiliate, and then went 7 years in Vegas, and I've been here 6.5 years. So there's your timeline.
Here we go.
A lot of gambling all throughout. That was a common thread, right? Riverboats in Vegas, Iowa, and then Vegas speaks for itself, and then out here.
Definitely a level up, though, because now you are the gambling guy for ESPN.
The guru? Yeah, I know. It's been awesome. Fun, man. And look, it was awesome going down memory lane. So that's some awesome hockey trends. What did you think of all that, Kai?
I thought it was really, really interesting. It's
crazy,
especially,
huh?
With the energy coming out of Vegas with the nights and everything.
Yeah.
That was awesome. And all his energy was just incredible.
Yeah, so I hope all of our listeners could track that. And we'll have another podcast next week from Las Vegas. We got to coordinate schedule, Kai, with Mr. Director, but maybe together in the studio. We'll figure all that out as I'll be out there doing a story for ESPN that we'll talk about next week on the podcast. So thanks to everyone downloading, rating, reviewing, all that stuff. And we'll have an exciting announcement as well next week, and in addition to the pod. So good stuff ahead for us here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.